Channel 2 Riot and a continuation of the visit with Rick after breakfast this Sunday morning, the 12th of December, 71. Beginning with Channel 2 Riot and a continuation of the visit with Rick this Sunday morning after breakfast, the 12th of December, 71.
And you only get 1450.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, you have cases short. That's why you have to check each item when it comes in. Watch the damage. But you can have so much less if you would just take a little time.
Now that roller, that can go a long ways, can't it?
Mm-hmm. And goes all the way from the end of that truck. Those semis must be, 50 feet long? In the door and all the way down the stock room. It was 150, 200 feet. And it's in sections, so you can just change the length any way you want. They're aluminum, see, they got like a beam on each side with little bars going across and little wheels on it.
Yeah.
It's a real nice way of unloading. They don't take care of them, they tear them up.
And when they get through, they're tired.
Mm-hmm.
And when they strike it.
So it's like they take delight in that, just crashing down.
They can take a hold of it and make the whole thing turn over.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it just all the sections come apart and the stands fall over, crash into the floor. And it's dangerous because you know if you're there and you break your foot or something, you got to carry them all down. We keep them stacked up in the corner and we got a good place to stack them. You know, they're pretty secure; they won't fall over. But they don't want to take the time. You don't save any time by knocking them all over like that. Like they just like to do it like that. There's one guy in the store I know who will take it apart the way I do, you know, each section at a time. And I guess the noise bothers him too, or the recklessness. Another thing they'll do is they have these wooden flats. See, it's a little like flat wooden trailer, flatbed. It's got two wheels in the back. And in the front, it's got two little metal skids there. And you've got a handle with two wheels that you hook onto it, and you can pull it around, so you then take the handle off. It's like the same way a semi-truck trailer operates, see. You got that cab that can drive around, or can hook onto a trailer and pull the trailer. Well, this works the same way. And you bring these out when you want to carry a lot of merchandise, say, out on the floor or something. Well, they'll bring these out, so you roll them in the back two wheels, and you've got the front end up in the air, and then just let it go. And that thing weighs, so 20 or 30 pounds, and it'll crash down on the floor on those metal skids, and just gives you this whack sound. Very penetrating, very, very hard on the ears. And I'll be damned if they don't love to do that. And they'll come up behind me and drop that thing, and I just, oh, no. This assistant manager, Steve, is the only one I've seen that'll set it down. They all like to do this. They pick things up and throw them, and tear the rollers down, and drop those flats.
And they're grown people.
Oh, yeah. Just reckless. Don't know. Don't know why they do it. But pick those heaters up and throw them.
Yeah. And if the dog food or something like that goes down it, and anything it hits is heavy enough, it'll sort of puncture the sack.
Mm-hmm. Many times I've watched that, we have stuff called kitty litter, which is ground up clay, and I put it in 10-pound bags, and you've got 5 bags per case. Well, the case is just paper, just a big paper sack. I've watched that come down the roller, and then it'll hit an uneven spot and snag it, and just watch 5 bags go rip and whoosh, all down to the floor. Nice. What a waste. Because then you got to stop and sweep it all up. And that takes a lot of time. If the manager comes back there, he says, let's get this all cleaned up. He's a real bug on getting things cleaned. You just lost about $10 worth of merchandise. And made it harder on yourself.
Well, how do they make that profit? Where do they make that profit?
Well, something like that. If it's damaged while you're unloading the truck, you just write it up, send it to the warehouse, and say, you know, damaged merchandise off truck, and they give you credit on it. See, they don't charge the store. Because the warehouse sells all this to the store, and the store sells it to the people.
Yeah.
The store doesn't make any money. Matter of fact, you couldn't live on what the store made. But the warehouse selling things to the store is where the money's made. See? That's
I come again.
You see, the warehouse buys all this stuff from the manufacturers.
Yeah.
And then they have all their stores, and they sell it to the store.
And they're the one that makes the money?
Yeah, the warehouses. That's where the money is made. And the store gives it to, you know, sells it to the people. Like, say we came out 4,000 short on inventory, so you know we're losing money. I don't know exactly how that works, but that's business, and I don't have a feeling for that. And if it works out like that, I don't think I want a feeling for it.
Well, who owns the store?
Well, Winn-Dixie does, the company.
But they don't make anything off the store.
No, not that much. But that's where all the money comes in. See, I don't know exactly how that works. But I guess you'd have to study
their margin's
profits.
Not too great on this stuff.
Well, they make, I think they make 2 cents on the dollar profit. And that's net profit, that's after
yeah,
you've
yeah.
taken care of your payroll and your taxes and your expenses and everything. So if you think about it, that's not too bad a profit. I mean, you figure a store is doing, say $100,000 a week, and that's a big store. That's, $2,000? $20,000, something like that. $2,000, that's not too bad. And they've got quite a few stores. I know they've got almost 100 down in Miami division. I think they've got 5 divisions. They're not hurting for money, but they'll say things like when you're bagging, each bag costs 2.5 cents. So if you double bag, then that's 2 cents profit of the company that you've just eaten up. So you don't ever double bag. At least you're not supposed to. I do it anyway, because I know one bag's going to tear. They're always riding about this penny pinching, and then you turn around and see them tear up all that merchandise in the back room. And I just go, It doesn't bother me so much that they're wasting all our profit. It's just that they don't care, and they tear it all up. I just think, you know, somebody could use that.
I imagine that would carry over into any institution. It may not be dog food, but they are right destructive. Now, when I went to work for C3, it was one of the great disappointments that I've had. I never wanted to, but when I got into it, when I was working with them, you see, I put in my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed, tried to make something of it. A good many of them just sort of talk against it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's destructive too, you see. They're making a living at it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they make their living at it, they ought to keep the bag straight on them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's much difference. Mm-hmm. The institution is big enough, it'll still go, and they can hammer on it inside.
Yeah. A lot of them I don't know why they don't care. I've watched the truck drivers. They're really interesting lot. Truck drivers. Most of them are pretty witty, pretty sharp guys, especially the white ones. And whenever you unload trucks, you always give them a hard time. They give you a hard time back, but all in fun. Say, Now, the black ones, some of them you talk to and get along with, some of them just, it's a job, and they don't want to be there because you have to work hard. And the Cubans, some of them get along with pretty good. But this one driver ran into the other morning really surprised me. I think he was Cuban. And I was out there unloading frozen food. Now, with frozen food, also you get frozen meat. And we used to put that to the side, just set it on the ground, because it has to go to a different cooler. And, you know, let meat department come out, because that's their job. You know, there's always this division of labor, and if you do somebody else's work, you get yelled at or something like this. So I was taking, you know, the frozen meat and tossing it on the ground. And he said, you know, why don't you put that all in the same flat? He says, you know, we all work for Winn-Dixie, and we're all working for the same thing, and it doesn't help to hurt to help anybody else out. Well, this is the first time I had anybody come across with this kind of attitude. And he's very, very pleasant, very soft-spoken man.
Well, that's the truck driver.
Yeah, he was really concerned about his job and doing it right and helping everybody out. And I sensed that, and I said, well, this has to go to another cooler. And he said, oh, I see. Yeah. And it surprised me that he would even care like that. Because usually, even among the store, it's like, oh, there's a meat department, don't worry about that, just throw it on the ground and let it go. And then they can come out and pick it up wherever it is. You're always fighting each other like that. It shouldn't be that way. You know, you should have a cart out there you can stack their stuff on.
Oh, they don't, yeah, have another cart.
Mm-hmm.
Put that stuff on.
But they have a separate payroll, and if I do their work, then grocery departments had to pay for somebody working the meat, is what it comes down to. But that seems like a trivial point to me, because it's not that much. He couldn't really figure it out.
And there's nothing the manager can do.
Yeah, there's something he can do, but he encourages the way it works. He encourages you not to do other people's work. But I don't see where, you know, helping them out a little on the side is anything. As a matter of fact, the competition between departments is a little sad at times. See, produce and grocery and meat and delicatessen, you have these four departments. They each have their own payroll, their own profit and loss, you know, set up. Well, when you ring an item out on the register, you hit a button, if it's grocery, meat, or produce, and that figures into a different part of the machine, see. And at the end of the day, you take readings on the machine and say maybe sold $3,000 worth of meat and $5,000 worth of grocery and $2,000 worth of produce. Then you report this to produce, you know, you sold such and such amount. And then he checks that against his inventory and he can figure out if he's making profit or not. Well, I've seen managers get on that register, and when they decide the grocery department's not making enough money, they'll start ringing meat up as grocery. So that's just like money lost to the meat department and pure profit to grocery. And there's nothing they can say about it, because they didn't see him do it. But I know it goes on, causes a lot of dissension. And that's why I figure that just carries over and causes people to, you know, just not give a damn about the other people. So this is your work, you do it. It won't help them out. It's too bad. But you have that kind of competition.
I have a feeling you run into that in any of these, anything you get into.
Yeah.
You see, I work with the countryside, and you see that they're the ones who run this grader along this road.
Mm-hmm.
And they just tear up the road. They just throw all that dirt out in the center there, and I don't know whether they all know it or not, in dry weather.
Mm-hmm.
And hardly get along with it. And most of the time, all it needs, you don't need to move much dirt. You just, all you need to do is just smooth it out, sort of just throw a little dirt up there.
Mm-hmm.
Very little. But they like to move dirt. They like to rebuild the road every time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's these people. You see, Marvin, you'd say wouldn't do that. I don't know what Marvin would do if he was on a road grader. That's a big machine, and it makes a man feel big.
Mm-hmm.
And anything, it bothered him that morning, he'll take it out on the road. And that's these fellas, you see. But I don't go to that side. You could.
Yeah.
You take Ms. Chitty is the finest of the reporters I run into. Well, she can't create institutions and that will preserve that. When she has a choice of what to do, say on Sunday afternoon, they get in the car and go for a ride. Just sail around the country. Just look at it at 50 miles an hour. Don't stop to talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a curious thing, isn't it? But I don't go into that. That you could.
But see, this is what Nick saw over the Sunshine Stud. Remember he came back that day? And he said, all they do is just waste things.
Yeah. Well, when you get them together, but see, I don't work with them together. I take them where they perform the best. And these talks I have with them, you see, they don't talk like that anywhere else. Now, you see, Faulkner's heard that sort of talk. He's heard good talk. But the people who teach Faulkner have never heard it.
Yeah.
And the people who read him. So, you get a lot of lost motion, misdirection, anything you get into. I've heard it said, you know, that the people who look at the good side of the advertising is the people who do the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
They say Whitman, you know, is Pollyanna. But some of the most savage comments on America I ever saw, he wrote, he just didn't work with it, you know. He took another approach.
The truck driver, that's interesting guy.
Yeah.
To see a truck driver and to know him and seeing that would be interesting.
Yeah, and you get the same drivers every so often. You used to get to know them pretty well. Some of them had worked for the company 20, 25 years. And they were like an institution in the company. They were, you know, they had their say-so and they got the runs they wanted. Nobody question, because they'd been there a long time, and they did their work, and they did it well.
Yeah.
But now, that was 3 or 4 years ago. Since then, the union has tried to come in, and they lost a lot of the good drivers, and a lot of the young ones there were trying to go union, not realizing that they weren't going to gain anything. And old drivers come and go real fast now. You don't see them that often. There's only one I can think of I recognize. It's not the same. They tear up the equipment. And don't talk. The old ones would talk, you know. So, also another thing's happened. Is see, it used to be when you unloaded a truck, the driver would pull up, and we'd open up the truck and get the back room set up to go. And he would unload the truck. So he'd be there 3 or 4 hours. And you had a lot of time to talk to him. And you'd take a break and he'd be with you. But now they come and leave the trailer and he drives off. He's maybe there 10 minutes. And during that time you're just unhooking the trailer. And you know, it's hi, goodbye. Then we unload the whole thing by ourselves. And then when it's finished they come back and pick the trailer up. This frees the driver to go do other work. So the only time you really get to see a driver for any length of time is when they unload produce on me. But you don't get to talk to him then because he's inside the truck and you're outside. You're just unloading and pulling it in.
So it's all rigged to keep you from talking.
Yeah.
You know, you need people to say those things. Now, are you tough enough?
What do you mean?
You pretty tough.
Well, I suppose it can be.
Huh? You don't mind odd hours?
No. Pretty flexible there.
You can move. You don't have to pack a suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't bust things.
No, I don't see any point. I just have to clean it up when I do. And
maybe you ought to bust a few people. Just get up and call right in the face.
I don't know, that might. I never was too good at that, though.
You ought to get good.
You learn it, whether you want to or not, though.
But now you see, all this stuff I do, I have encountered a good deal of opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And, I gotta take it.
That's, yeah, I found that with truck drivers. There can be a burly lot. And sometimes I just start quipping with them. And they come back fast and hard on you, much more than I would ever dream. I would just be just caught off my guard.
Yeah.
See? And I had to learn, you know, that they were kidding.
Yeah.
But it's just to be able to keep coming back. And you have a lot of fun doing that.
And it is right smart of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised. I guess you think of a truck driver as some big dumb guy, but they're not. Most of them are pretty sharp.
Now,
mm-hmm.
They're well paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're probably making more than I am.
Yeah. The man that, way back, the driver of this central truck line here, stop in the store and leave off a box of cigars. He's making more than the store manager.
Mm-hmm.
They've been way up. They've been paid. Some of them at least have been higher. Way up there.
Hmm.
Oh, and does it cost to move stuff by truck now? It used to be cheap, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I bought that little heating pad for $6.99 from Sears, $6.95. And they charged $1 to bring that down in a truck from Atlanta. Just a little heating pad. Heidi pad.
That's right.
They don't have to make a profit on the merchandise. They can just, you know, transition. And there's nobody to complain to, you see, there.
Yeah.
You can't get at anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes,
I never realized this was such a world. The stockman back there, and the truckers, and all that goes on, in order for me to walk into Winn-Dixie and just be a well-ordered store.
Oh, it goes so much further than that. You go back to the warehouse. So I can see every bit of it through my father, all the way from the time that you send in what you want, and everybody it has to go through before it gets out to that store. And it's amazing. I know the whole chain of command there.
Yeah.
He prints it up, and he sends it to the warehouse. The warehouse gives it to the selector. He goes out, puts it on a cart, and then somebody else takes that cart to the truck, and somebody else loads it in the truck. Somebody else has to check that truck out, make sure it doesn't weigh too much, and somebody else has to assign a driver.
Does your daddy, do you hear your daddy talk about the system?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all go back the whole system.
Does he?
How it's changed and what he did to it. He just recently started kind of bragging on himself a little bit about the things he did in the company and how things changed. And before he never said anything now. He was, he used to be those trucks went out overloaded. And if they catch them, they fine them. And he said one time a truck was fined $1,800 for being overweight, which just about killed the guy that was in charge of it. Because how do you go to your superior and say, we got an $1,800 fine on one of the trucks for being overweight, and it was my fault? So my dad, at the time, I guess he was a mail clerk or something like this. This was a long time ago when he just started with the company. And he had to get all these bills and get them to the right people and put them in the right slots. And he would see these fines, but they were always filed on the miscellaneous. So nobody really knew this was going on. So one day he just called it to his superior's attention, said, you know, we're spending about $7,000, I think it was a year, on truck fines. And the guy didn't know it. He said, oh. And he said, yeah, I just thought I'd call it to your attention. Well, as a result, that was reduced to almost nothing. Just because he brought it up. When he did tell me about those days and the people he worked with and the systems he went through.
You never mentioned your daddy, and he reports.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes. He's pretty quiet at the dinner table. Every once in a while he'll talk. And his hours are such that he's pretty tired and he just doesn't talk about it that much, but when he does it well. He reports pretty well.
You've written some on him.
Mm-hmm. I've got a lot at home on him.
Oh, and how long did you pass it around?
Well, I just may do that.
You just send me stuff that you don't know a thing about.
All right. He surprised me, too. He was, he's a little conniving in that business. I remember when they were building the office, he knew what he wanted. And they asked him, you know, plan out what kind of office you need. So he went and drew an office that was one third against what he wanted. And the guy said, what are you doing? He says, well, don't worry. He says, when we send this into approval, we'll cut about a third of it off. So I gave him a third there to cut off, and that way I'll get what I wanted. And that's just what happened. He got all the office he wanted, and they cut away everything he just threw in there for them to cut off.
Well, that's it.
See? I never knew that.
That's not dishonest.
No. And he surprised me. But he's been there and he knows all these people that are way, way up there now. See, he's on friendly terms with them, first name basis, with presidents and all this. People in the store speak about C.W. Waldorf, division manager. And I don't know how to tell him that I used to go over his house and swim in his pool. You know, to him, Waldorf, to them, you know, Waldorf's some kind of god or something, you know. To me, I'd say, hi, Clarence, how you doing?
Uh-huh.
So, I don't say anything about this, that I've been this close to all those people. And I can't take the company as seriously as they do, because I've rubbed shoulders with all these people since I was this high.
Well, this is kind of a hierarchy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to see my dad as a funny position, because he's not way up there as far as authority goes, but he's been there so long that he can be contrary and they can't do anything about it. And be damned if he won't be contrary when he wants to. And he just get everybody on his back, and that's the way I think it should be done. He won't give in. And it just makes them all mad. I don't know, you get to be a character.
He knows how far he can go.
Yeah. He's been there something like 26 years, 27 years now. And, yeah. He's got a little weight because of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to think of the top men as being pretty well immune from trouble. But I think they get more pressure on them than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, now, just this last week, this new head, the one you went in and see.
Green field?
Yeah. They've had several leave here who were professors. Well, the university rule is, in that case, they drop that down to assistant professor. And they don't keep that line position, they call it. So he's on the line. He's got to keep that professorship on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he can lose sleep over that, you see. And then he doesn't have any time for people like me. And I'm the one that pays off.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I left a few little manuscripts on his desk, handed it to him. I thought, well, he can read it in 10 minutes. I waited a week or two and never hear from him, and he hadn't got to it. So they can get it. No. Another way you figure it, a man at the bottom, actually, you know, more people can kick him. So you almost preserve yourself by being a climber. Upward climbing, that's what I call it. Not easy, though. But the organization, you see, the way I figure the organization is, you gotta keep it going, keep it healthy, and it'll take just so much pulling against it, because that's your life. I mean, that's your where you make a living. That's where you live, where you make your contact, and you gotta live there too. You see, so you have to do a whole lot just to keep it healthy. Try deliberately to keep it healthy. Now, you see, that's not, I don't know whether they have that mentality or not. I don't know where along the line you get that in an establishment like yours. You can work it and milk it and everything else, you see, so far, but after that you've got to produce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can see how it can be from what you say, you can see how it's not a game, but it can be a kind of way of living it so much, and you know, to make it go.
That's what they expect. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And becomes your life.
Like it.
Now you don't find anybody loose around there, so you hike out down to one of those places south of Miami where the farm.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those names down there?
Too much as far as names go, they're just roadside stands.
I mean the towns down there.
I don't even know if they got any towns down there. Just South Miami, Homestead.
Homestead.
Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But in those, and that's all farming country.
Pretty much, yeah. Homestead is it's farm, then there's an air base down there. So that's what you have. It's mostly airmen and their families and farmers.
And big vegetable farms.
Yeah. There's no house or barn or anything there. It's just land, and it's all truck farming, you know. So they bring people in, tend it, and take them off again. land just sits there. And there's nowhere to go to talk to anybody. I don't know where the people are. They're the pick, and just roadside stands. They're the only place you run into.
And the people that run the roadside stands are not the owners.
I don't think they are. As a matter of fact, someone, a friend of mine who goes to one stand regularly, found out that the lady buys a lot of the stuff from these farmers and then, you know, sells it at a little higher price.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't go out and pick it that much. She does some. She's got a garden and grows some of it, but a lot of it she gets from, you know, farmers and stuff. But of course, a real cheap price.
So they're really not farmers in the sense.
No, they're
really could be.
They're business people, I guess.
Yeah, but you
small time.
But you tried them out to see if they talk.
Mm-hmm. I was hard, so, you know, I didn't know how to go into it, and I was moving, you know, from one to another, just looking at them. But they were interested in selling. Most of the stands, the busy ones were. And that's why she kept saying, you can pick your own out. And I got the impression, you know,
yeah,
taking out my time, I can be weighing these things up for people and taking their money. But I made her pick them all out for me.
But you still didn't get any talk.
I guess you'd have to go there. I mean, they don't know me from man to moon. I'm a stranger to them. I have to go there often before they, you know, trust you, talk to you.
I think that's one of the things you have to work on. I use the word manipulate, scheme. It seems to me like it's considerably underhanded what I do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm plotting against people to get them in a place, you see, where it'll be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick worked out, put the connections out there where I could tape out there in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out the talk out there wasn't any good. I couldn't get any good talk out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only place I've ever been able to get sustained talk, you know, most of the time is right here in the kitchen. Why, I don't know. But I don't need to know why, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. But it seems to me, now you see, you're not looking for information. To find out how the company runs, you won't know about it. I mean, you just assume that. The talk, and see, the talk that I use is informative talk. All the talk I get is informative talk. People talking about their experience. Their experience consists of learning things, information. It's informative. It's informative. You say what's not informative? It's what I say is not informative. It's what I call this Freudian talk, you see, of quipping and
mm-hmm.
and talk on the institution. I can't that institutional talk, you see, I have to get out of that. And a great deal of the talk I hear is on institution, you see, and that's sort of deadly too. So what you know, you can be selective and say you just want one part of the world, not any other. But you see, I don't know. I can't work in your world. But I know this. What you did out here, I didn't know you could do it. That week you were out here,
mm-hmm.
you worked with Cookie and with Marvin and all, and you made the reports, and they were good. Especially the last one. That was Hayden over there and Miss Guthrie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was good. It was very good. Basically, it was all there is to do. But you see, you can go from there and you can write in more information, more about the people, and more insights. Your interpretation, see, was light. I don't know. So, you see, what I'd do, I'd go from there and I'd say, you went over there and worked a half day with them. Go over there and work a week with them. Just hire out and work. And, but you don't work yourself down, you see. But they won't work you down anymore. You got energy to. Now, and every time you come home, go to that right typewriter. Now, you've got people in this whole countryside I can't get to. Jolie. I'd give anything to get him to come up here. He won't come. I can't get him. I had a chance at one time, but at that time I didn't know how to talk to him. His son-in-law, or son, was going to take over this red and white store and make an opening and wanted to put in some cows over here. Well, you see, he was cheap on it. But if I could do it now, I'd pay and put the cows over here just to get Jolie over here. Of course, you wouldn't do that. I'm not just manner of speaking. Oh, man alive! And he can talk. And he can talk and do everything else, just like Mr. Weaver comes over here at Steve Hackett's session and talks solid for 2 or 3 hours. Goes right ahead of what he's doing. You know how the barbershop, you don't know that. They used to do that. But people somehow along the line got allergic to talk.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be bothered with an old barber talking to them. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I think you've got to start. I don't believe there's any salvation for the urban. I don't believe you can start in the urban. I think you got to get out of that Freudian world or the competitive world. I think you've got to get out of it in order to start. And get a hold of yourself and your skills. That's all I can see. Now, I'm not telling you
well,
what it is.
Well, this is what Rick says. You
I'm
know,
not
Rick
telling you what it is. Now, you see, I wouldn't play at it, you know. I'd be deadly serious. I don't know. Ever since I can remember, I seem to have gone at a job up to a point of exhaustion. And then I somehow or other just collapsed and mended. I know I've done that since 1935. I know I've done it that long. Now, what I did before that, I haven't really tried to remember. Anything I did, that's where I did it. I stuck with it. Well, my lights were dim. You see, I thought I was getting somewhere, but I didn't get there very fast. I went through so many pieces, it took me nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. You see, I've learned several languages and used them. Read them, listened them, could hear them. Well, learning a language is equivalent to learning the Winn-Dixie.
Well, you learned it.
Yeah, if you learned it. And I had pretty good control of it. Well, I never quite got to the point where I used it, and when I got to the use of it, I didn't want to use it the way I had to in order to make something of it. These, you see, I wasn't good enough to be an interpreter and things like that. And there was limited use for it. Oh, I don't know, all those things that were just almost dead loss. And all this foreign literature that means nothing, and these translations that are wooden, and all this Anglo-Saxon grammar, which isn't nothing, absolutely nothing. They got grammar for the Anglo-Saxon language that is just a puzzle. Anglo-Saxon, the language simply couldn't be as deadly as that grammar that they used for it. It simply couldn't be. Simply couldn't be. Now, one of the people who write on that period can't even speak French. We were there at the restaurant one time, and I had to order for her. Now, that's what she knows about language. She knows that deadly book on Anglo-Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the academic world, if you're looking for twisted perspectives, you'll find it. You don't have to go to the commercial world for that. Well, you really get it. You really get it. I ran this little girl up the office, faculty wife, one of the brand new ones. Oh, she came by. She and her husband had a little child, and the little child looked scant. And she'd been sick. Oh, she was having a time of her life, she said, working at Moss Brothers in the mall. I picked her up. I said, that's fine. You can just go down there, have a good time. And when you come home at night, you can face it at your typewriter and see what you've done. You know what she said? Right quick, she says, I'm going to get a job teaching Italian. What's she got to teach in Italian? Just the parts of speech.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't got any content, you see, no point of view or nothing. She got no object, but she can teach Italian. Now, that's what the world has been afflicted with in most of the language teachers. They don't know a damn thing. They don't know nothing. Nothing. All they know about literature ought to be forgotten. Just taken out and sunk in the Atlantic Ocean with lead around it.
Okay.
That's what they know about literature. So you don't have to go far to find all this torsion. So you got to harden yourself to that, and you know, kind of get make a line. I can't imagine anything, Fee, you see, Rick. He can go anywhere he wants to. See, Nick could too, but Nick didn't have the intellect. They could go all those places. He got something. But he didn't quite have the background, you know, to keep him going. Quiet. He had a lot. There's no doubt about that. God almighty, when you think of these people like old Jolie down there, that I can't even get to in the grocery store. All over this country.
The thing that it appears to me that Guy has done, you know, over these years that he's been out here, he has discovered the material in the, you know, the people who are worth, who have something to say. And that seems to me is one of the difficult things.
Yeah.
So that cuts out a lot of this experimenting. Now, you know,
yeah.
You might go out and find somebody that's surprising to us, has something to say. But the Jolies and the Tuck Macs and the people, you know, Beattie over here.
Oh, yes.
You see, we know they have
Beattie.
Things to say.
You see, if he sees me coming, he clams up.
He does.
Yes.
But he'd see you coming. It'd be different.
Yes, after a while. He just talks to his buddies.
Oh.
But he talks to him by the hour. He talks to old Jim Means. And Jim Means is the one I'd give my teeth to got to. Jim Means. I think he's too far gone now. I think he's lost his vigor. Jim Means. Yes, sir. Oh, he could talk. He could report. And he was screwball. He kept his income down below the federal level and lived on it so he wouldn't have to pay taxes.
Oh, he would be something.
Yes, sir. He wasn't going to be a party to all this wild world that's going on. Well, all he does is get a bad, hard name. You see, he got the wrong view. But it makes him rich. And he sees what goes on. And he can talk. Now, he don't see it in your terms. That sort of stuff you talk about. He'll put the people in, you see. He'll put the people in. Oh, you know, I don't know how to say it. I don't, the critical terms sort of lose cookie coming over. When he gets here, I want to get him. Let me tell you what happened. He's here the other night, and I put on one of those recorders, and the damn thing didn't work. It kept running, but I hadn't put down the record button. Oh, I put it down, and it's easy for it to jump out. And that was the time he had he came in here worried about Frank, and he says, "I want some advice from you fellas." And he just told all the troubles that he is having with Franklin. And it was troubles. And he reached a point there where he could quit. And I said, "Cookie, I forget now the transition. Oh yes, oh yes. I forget how it came up, but the transition was making a steer off of Suzanne's little horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Baba.
I said, they didn't even time. He just stood up there. He says, that's all they ever did. They used a twitch. And if they needed to, they caught him. Even the old vets. I said, you never told me that. When did you see that done? So he told me. You see, when you started out, you were all abstract. Then you got to talking about Joe and those bundles. You were getting...
It's amazing.
Rather circumstantial.
Right here.
But,
yes,
but Cookie's always circumstantial. You give him a chance, you see. He don't like the statements. He gives his cases. And I forget the transitions. I said, that little bastard's not coming. It made them pictures. They never do. Well, he says he'll come. He says, I'm going to give him a dinner. I want 15 or 20 of them. And I'm going to cook them myself. I said, Cookie, you can't cook soup. Well, he says, I was a short order chef at the pub in Charleston, West Virginia, a year when Helen was sick.
You never knew?
And then he went from that down here. I just eaten with Faye at that waffle shop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a soul in there. And he told me who the waitresses were and who the lady who ran it. And he's used those gridirons. He used them. But where he worked, they didn't hand him a slip of paper. They just hollered it out. I ought to get him, and the way he talked about those people is rich. I want to see if we can get going. And see, that's the talk. But that's not the experience itself, that's the talk. And you're not getting the talk. And the experience itself is very hard to handle. I can't do it, the experience itself. The reporting of it, you see, is where you, that's what's rich, sits through somebody else's eyes. At least you got to do that part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, I can't lay down the rules because I couldn't do it myself. Started paralyzing me and this is small the back. I had to quit. I'd go out there and take a cold shower and paralyze me in the back. But see, that's what slowed me down. I can't take those cold showers. That's what kept me going all this time. That's where you get your vigor. That damn old hot water will take it all out of you.
Well, I tell you. Okay, we might ride a minute, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. We got trailer for that.
That's channel 2 right towards the end, and the end of the talk with Rick after breakfast this Sunday morning, the 12th of December, 71. This is channel 2 right towards the end of channel 2 right, and the end of the visit with Rick. The talk with Rick after breakfast is Sunday morning, 10th of December, 71. Channel 2 right towards the end, and the end of the visit, the talk with Rick after breakfast is Sunday morning, the 10th of December, 12th of December, 71.